All right, so let's talk about our let's talk about the doshas in a little bit more depth. I really just like very barely scratched the surface with the doshas the other day, and hopefully I can get through all three of them here. That would be good if I could. So hopefully I can. Oh, that's weird. What's going on here? Pitta, Vata. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay, great. So let's start with Kapha. Remember, Kapha is ruled by the water and earth elements. It corresponds to the salt principle of alchemy and the fixed mode of astrology. And each of the doshas has certain sites of dwelling, areas and organs of dwelling in the body. These are the sites where Kapha will accumulate. Now remember, Kapha is heavy, cold, wet, dense, cloudy. And I guess I'll... So, let's see, how do I want to do this? I'm going to talk about the general physical characteristics first. So, Kapha type individuals tend to have well-developed bodies, but can tend to carry a little bit of excess weight. The chest tend to be expanded and broad, and the veins and tendons tend to be obscured. You don't really see like their veins or their tendons so well because they tend to have like very thick, like thick skin. Oftentimes they're have a very pale complexion. Now this is like pure Kapha, so we'll see pale skin, moist skin, thick, lustrous, oily hair, also like dark hair, really thick kind of fuzzy eyebrows, thick lustrous eyelashes. You can see very thick earlobes, large kind of round faces. They tend to be like the larger framed people, right? So one of the ways Matthew describes it really simplistically is Kapha, Pitta, Vata, thick, medium, thin. And so Kaphas will oftentimes see have a teardrop shaped body. It is very common for Kapha types. They tend towards water accumulation, cold depression tissue states, damp stagnation tissue states. They tend to have slow but regular appetites. They can tend to overeat, and they typically don't need to take as much food as the other doshas, but because of their nature, they tend to like to eat, particularly sweet foods, which is the food that they shouldn't eat the most of. So, Kaphas will oftentimes have very like strong endurance. Like they're the people that can work steadily, consistently for long periods of time, good stamina. Whereas a Vata, because they tend to be a little weaker, they get tired really easily. And a Pitta, they've got endurance and stamina, but they tend to work too hard too fast, and then they burn out. They're like, oh my God, I'm exhausted. So some of the emotional characteristics we'll see with a Kapha, they tend to be very calm, very tolerant, forgiving, loving. They're kind of like the sweet mothering kind of energy. Their voices, like anyone that's ever heard Matthew Wood speak, he's got a classic Kapha voice. Like a Kapha voice tends to be gentle and soft and kind of warm and caring and kind. Right, whereas a Pitta voice is going to have more sharpness, directness, and kind of a piercing quality to it, right? And then you have the Vata voice that's kind of way out here, and you kind of felt like spacey and like, wow. Where you can like hear the wind in their voice, right? It's like, oh, cool. So, but the Kapha's more kind of grounded. Remember, earth and water, so you're going to feel that kind of heaviness there. So on that positive side, very calm, very forgiving, very loving, very kind. On the flip side of that, they can tend towards greed, attachment. They can get really envious and really possessive, really jealous of other people. Their minds can be a little bit slower to comprehend things, but when they learn it, it's there. It's like it's like it fixes itself in their mind. So they sometimes can maybe be a little bit slower to learn things, but when they do learn something, it's solid. It's like stays in there. So the kapha types can tend towards obesity, but that doesn't mean that the only kapha types are obese, right? So, or even that teardrop shape. So, and just think of like in India, like in the old days, like, you know, they weren't exactly having much problems with obesity probably. So the other way you can see a kapha type person is big boned, like really big boned people. Like I've met kaphas that actually they're not like obese or like, but they're large framed people, right? Like big boned, and they can have like, there's like a really solid structure to their body. You'll oftentimes see they have a deep, like more of a deep voice. And I can think of a couple people I know that are like that. So, okay. So an important thing to understand about the doshas is that each one has a main site of accumulation in that's specific to the digestive system. So the digestive system is the root of the vital tree. So we'll see that the three main sites of accumulation of the doshas are the stomach, the small intestine, and the large intestine. And hopefully if I have time, I can talk a little bit about the theory of their theory of disease. If I don't have time, I'll send you a copy of the lecture that you can listen to. But in Ayurvedic disease theory, that these doshas will first begin to accumulate in the site of accumulation in the digestive system. And then when that organ gets filled, kind of like that cup overflows with that dosha, it will then enter the body proper and then deposit into a particular organ system, where then it's going to create more of a symptomatic picture. So in Ayurveda, it's easiest to cleanse and remove an excess of dosha when it's strictly located in the GI. So this is a really unique aspect of Ayurvedic theory that I think is really important, because it shows how all the root is always in the GI. So the main site of accumulation for kapha is the stomach. So kapha tends to accumulate in the stomach. And from there we see when it enters the body, it tends to dwell primarily in the chest and in the lungs. So that's where you see damp accumulation in the lungs. That's why, like, if you ever have like drink, like dairy, for example, is a very kaphagenic food. So if you drink a whole bunch of dairy, it's like, you ever drink dairy and then you get kind of mucusy in your lungs or your respiratory system? That's kapha, right? And it's moistening the stomach and it's filling the stomach with kapha, and then that spreads to the other organs. So you see the chest, the throat, the pancreas, the stomach, and the fat and adipose tissue are main areas of dwelling of kapha, as well as the nose and the tongue. Now, in Ayurvedic anatomy, they say that there are 5 waters of kapha, 5 fires of pitta, and 5 airs of vata. So I'd like to run through these 5 parts of the body. So here we have the 5 waters of kapha, the water of the stomach, which is called kledaka. This is said to be the most important of the waters, for this is where mucus accumulates and causes it to form throughout the body. So people with like chronic mucus conditions in Ayurveda, they would say that it's like something's wrong with the stomach. So that water of the stomach aids in digestion, liquefies food, and nourishes the rest of the waters of the body. When aggravated, being when it's in excess, that water is going to kind of put out the fire, the agni of the stomach, and you'll get that heaviness and coldness and nausea and things like that. And they say that each of these waters and the organs have certain teachings. So they say that the kledaka teaches about fluidity and assimilating our emotions. And then we have the water of the heart, called Avalambhaka. And this is the water that insulates the heart from the fire of the heart. So remember in Ayurveda, wherever there's a fire, there has to be a water to temper it. So they say that this has a lot to do with the plasma tissue, which is, we can think of plasma as like the, I like to think of that as like the extracellular space. And I like to think of the Avalambhaka as like, that's what we're connecting with through our heart perception, right? Is that water of the heart, that feeling nature of the heart. And it teaches us about that protective maternal nature. Okay, then we have the water of the tongue, Bodhaka. This is all about the perception of taste, right? So you have to have a moist tongue in order to taste your food properly, and a chronically dry tongue can indicate that there's impaired digestion, that that water element is deficient. So this is where we see all of that. If the waters of the tongue are deficient, then the digestive system will be deficient, because that's kind of the starting point. That, as I was saying earlier, that well-coordinated process of digestion starts in your mouth. And if that water is imbalanced, then everything else can get thrown off from there. And when this is disturbed, we see an accumulation of what is called ama in Ayurveda, which is toxins, unmetabolized food waste. And it teaches about discernment and moderation. Okay, next we have the water of the head called Tarpaka. And the Tarpaka is the, I like to think of it as like the cerebrospinal fluid, the water that coats the brain and the spine and all of the nerves. So I like to think of that really as oils, right? Because our whole nervous system is coated in oils, which is, you know, our nerves are, it's like electrical, so it's what conducts that force. When imbalanced, we see dullness, poor memory. Then we have the water of the joints, Slesaka, which is that lubrication in our joints that allows them with mobility and protects them from heat and dryness. So in Ayurveda, they have ways of determining. So those are the five waters of kapha. And that starts to give you some things to look for in potential kapha imbalances. Now, each of the doshas has a particular quality in the pulse that we want to look for. And pulse is interesting. It's a very difficult thing to describe through language, and oftentimes it's helpful to use metaphor. So, I love the ways that they describe pulses. So they say in the kapha pulse is the swan, like a swan gliding across a pond, right? So that's kind of what the pulse feels like. Slow, languid, soft, broad, regular, right? So kapha, everything's like regular. So it's going to be consistent, but it's going to be steady and kind of slower. It can also be obscure. So kaphas, oftentimes their pulse can be difficult to find because they have thicker skin. So the pulse can be, and the veins and the arteries are a little bit further down. So it can be a little obscure and difficult to find. But they call it the swan pulse. And they say the ring finger tends to be predominant in a kapha pulse. Ring finger, so the index finger goes, there's this little bone right there, that bump. So then if you follow that up your arm, you'll feel a dip. That's your first pulse position. And then your next ones just go next to it. Pardon? Yeah, so if you feel right here at the base of your thumb, there's this knobby bone right there. Now you follow that up your arm and it'll dip down in a little valley. Feel that? That's your first pulse position. So that, and you always want to read your pulse like this. Your index finger should be closest to the thumb and the ring finger is further up the arm. So say a kapha pulse, the ring finger position will be predominant. That's very general. I'm not going to get too much into pulses this year because it's really complex. So on the tongue, the way we assess kapha accumulation is dampness, swollen. Oftentimes you'll see scalloped along the ridges, like the kind of indentations, which shows that the tongue is swollen with fluid, damp accumulation. And it's like the teeth are making indentations on the side of the tongue. And I say that's usually like spleen. Chinese medicine's like spleen deficiency, which is like digestive fire. And then you'll see thick white coating. That's the indication of excess kapha or mucus accumulation or ama. And yeah, you'll see dampness and the thick white coat. And just in general, a large tongue, like a kapha tongue, is going to be more broad, like a very broad tongue with very round, like rounded, whereas a pitta tongue is going to be more like flame shaped, like it comes to a tip, right? Or a vata tongue is going to be more like kind of quivering and shaky, really thin, really dry. Okay, so signs of aggravation. So when kapha is disturbed in the body, we're gonna see a decreased digestive function. We're gonna see a lowering of digestive fire. We're gonna see overall accumulation of phlegm and mucus. So that is gonna be oftentimes in the lungs and the respiratory system, can be in the digestive system. General damp stagnation tissue state. Or cold depression. So remember, kapha is cold, wet, and heavy. So that's what we're gonna see in when that dosha is aggravated. So tiredness, heaviness, coldness, sleeping a lot, laziness, depression, obesity, things like that. So these are the things to be aware of. And then one of the things I'm always, you know, so the thing that's really important with kind of assessing the constitution and the doshas is that you can observe literally every part of the body has its specialness or uniqueness to each dosha. So you can look at everything from the fingers. I tend to look at fingers and hands a lot, right? So a kapha, like hands or fingers, like the fingers will tend to be like maybe a little shorter or chubbier or thicker hands, whereas like a pitta is going to be right in the middle, and a vata you're going to see like long and slender, and here's a key vata characteristic, prominent joints, right? So the finger will like be slender, and then the joint will kind of jut out, and then it'll be slender again. So I've got, this is like a pretty in the middle pitta hand, right? In the middle pitta hand. What's that? Yeah, that's a great example. So, and then you can see her tendons right there like that. If you don't mind. So yeah, she's got good vata hands. So imbalancing forces. So we want to be aware that things that tend to imbalance kapha the most are sweet foods. Sweet foods are earth element. They tend to be very tamasic or heavy, dense. Salty foods, oily foods. These are all very imbalancing to kaphas. Kaphas tend to need bitter, pungent, astringent foods or tastes. Which, geez, how much astringent and pungent food or astringent and bitter food do we get in our modern diet, right? Not too much. We tend to really like what? Salty and sweet. And oily, right? Dairy, red meat, frozen and cold foods, excess sleep, laziness, lethargy, these are all things that increase kapha. So I know I'm going through this really quickly, but I'd like to be able to get through all three doshas if I can. And let's see. So that's the other thing here, is that just to mention, you know, doshas aren't good or bad, they just are. And so there's healthy expressions of each one and not so healthy expressions of each one. So no matter our constitution, no matter our dosha, we all have innately with it different sets of struggles and challenges and imbalances that we all face. And that's what I love about these models. When I first learned about this, it was like, oh my God, this is so helpful, because there's a pattern. That's like a pattern that you can see in people and start to understand almost immediately what they might deal with. And like, for me, I'm always observing this. Like, I just have trained my mind that anytime I see anyone, it's the first thing I do. Anytime someone comes up to my booth at an event, it's the first thing. I'm looking at their hair and their skin and their eyes and their eyelashes and their eyebrows and their hands and their complexion and how they talk and how they listen and how they carry themselves, what their posture is like, all these things. It's all language, right? It's all language. I do it when I'm in line at the freaking grocery store. It's like, I can't stop, right? Because I wanted to learn it, right? When I first learned about this, I was like, I'm going to make this a discipline, right? You make this a discipline that you start looking for it and start observing it. And it's in that way, like KP Khalsa said that his teacher was able to tell him everything that was wrong with a client by the time they walked down the hallway into his office. He's like, that person coming, they have diabetes and they have liver stagnation and they need these herbs or whatever. And he was just so good that he didn't even have to really talk to the person. He could just look at them, look at their tongue, take their pulse, and be like, here's your herbs. Come back in a week. Well, obviously we need a little bit more in depth usually, but he was like a master. So this is learning to use our senses, because this is what we have as herbalists available to us. We don't always have access to fancy technological tests or blood work or, you know, things like that that doctors have. But as herbalists, we don't have access to that most of the time, right? So what do we have? We got our senses and we got conversation skills, right? To learn to interview and intake and have really good assessment, right? Through observation. And that's how medicine was practiced for thousands of years up until this more modern scientific technological era, which I really, you know, I think it's really great that there's all this technology and the way that science and medicine have come together and that we can understand so much about the body, but I just see it kind of strips away the art of intake and really like digging in and like the art of like the tongue and the pulse and like those evaluation methods that all the old doctors used to see into the body. Again, I think a lot of those more modern tests and technologies are really good, but I think to be reliant on them, I think is kind of missing a lot of information that we can collect through our senses. So as I'm talking, are you guys maybe thinking of people that you might know that might have a kapha constitution, or maybe, say again?
I have some kapha.
Yeah.
Kapha.
Yeah. 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 That seems accurate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's So you definitely, and you can hear it in your voice. You have some kapha in your voice. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then in your hair.
Yeah.
Your hair, like that really thick, lustrous, oily hair. It's good. Yep. Sorry, but I shouldn't do that unless I have your permission. I'm sorry. I shouldn't. Okay, sorry. Sometimes I forget. Okay.
You're trying to not look around the room.
Right.
Hello!
Yeah, right. Yeah, I had a really harsh lesson in that one time where, you know, I started mentioning, someone made a comment, and I was like, oh, yeah, and you also noticed. And they got a little, like, they were like, can you not do, like, I feel really uncomfortable right now. Like, everyone's looking at me, you know. I was like, I felt really bad. But it was, like, one of those, like, bitter learning moments for myself. So, yeah, I apologize. If you really don't want me to do that, please maybe raise your hand or something. But, yeah, that can be really helpful. We have done that in the past. Where we'll have people stand up and just point out some of the characteristics, but it can be really uncomfortable sometimes. So, okay, so, and that's the thing, a key thing here is that there's actually seven constitutions. So we have pure kapha, pure pitta, pure vata. Then we have vata kapha, vata pitta. Then we have pitta vata. And then we have vata pitta kapha, the tridosha. Right, so the tridosha is a little bit more rare, but, well, she won't mind, but Whitney is actually tridoshic. And one way that we'll see is that oftentimes there will be a physical constitution and a psychological constitution. Yeah. So oftentimes you'll see someone has a very predominant physical dosha, and then they'll have more of a psychological temperament. Okay, so then another way of observing a good thing to be aware of is a concept in Ayurveda called the malas, or waste products. This is basically looking at the feces and urine. So with kaphas, oftentimes like a kapha elimination, the stools will oftentimes be soft, pale, and slow to evacuate. Kaphas can tend towards constipation. And the urine will oftentimes be very dense, heavy, thick, and cloudy.
Does that pale feces, like, does that have any relationship to the bile?
Absolutely, yeah. Pale stools always has some sort of bile insufficiency there, so yeah. Okay, so then we see the environment and seasonal cycles. So the doshas aren't just in people, but they're in plants and all of nature. So there we see the kapha season is winter time and early spring, right? Should make sense. Winter's cold, heavy, wet, cloudy. So we can think of plants like this too. So kapha plants will oftentimes be thick, like that comfrey out there. That's a pretty kapha plant, right? The broad leaves, very dense and compact, downward moving. Also like really juicy, oily plants. Oftentimes they'll be very cooling and moistening, soothing, sweet and salty tastes. Oh yeah, right there, comfrey. So again, I'm not going to get into a lot of detail on it, but you know, our botanical dynamics there for the doshas are going to be very similar to what we studied with the elements. So you can revisit that material if you want to think that through more. So now those are plants that embody kapha. Like those plants are kapha in nature. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are used to treat kapha, right? So in Ayurveda, they always use the principle of antipathy or opposites balance, right? So with kaphas, we typically use pungent, stimulant, diuretic remedies to drain moisture, astringe and tighten, tonify tissues, increase the fires and the heat of the body so that you're, you know, because when you have that water and earth accumulation, it draws energy away from the fire and the water. So we want to typically build that heat. Okay, so let's talk about pitta here. Pitta is composed of fire and water. It corresponds to the sulfur principle of alchemy, the cardinal mode of astrology. The main site of accumulation of pitta is the small intestine. Oh, which I guess I will mention, in Ayurveda they have certain methods of purging an excess dosha from that site of accumulation in the digestive system. So with kapha is purged through virachana or purgative therapies, vomiting. So the vomiting cleanses excess mucus from the stomach and the lungs. That's where sometimes people that get really damp respiratory conditions can get very nauseous, because that mucus, like almost like a post-nasal drip, if they're swallowing all the mucus, it gets into their stomach, and then they get really nauseous, and then they vomit, and then their lungs are more clear. So Now, with pitta, it accumulates in the small intestine, and it is relieved through laxatives. Purge excess pitta from the system. I'll talk about the physical characteristics a little bit. So pittas are kind of right in the middle. Not too thin, not too thick. So they, pittas oftentimes have a medium build. They tend to have muscular tone, muscular development. It's very common for pittas to have freckles. Red hair is very common in many pittas, though not all the time. We can see that they will have warm skin to the touch, red face. Everything's just kind of in the middle with the pitta. But they tend, the way I like to think of it is they tend to have an athletic build. Right. And not too tall, not too short. They have a very fast metabolism, so they tend to like need to eat frequently, or they get cranky, or what we call hangry. So, any pittas resonate with that?
Actually, you know, like, I mean, maybe this is just something. There could be like some sort of imbalance, like a proper imbalance or something. But like, sometimes I find that I don't have enough.
Right. Well, oftentimes with pittas, they forget to eat. They get their adrenals are burnt. They're burning on adrenals, and then they just keep go, and they're like, oh my God, I haven't eaten. And oftentimes they'll experience that hunger not so much in the stomach, but in the nerves and in their mood. Right. So they'll start getting kind of like cranky, and they'll get a little like moody and frustrated, a little ungrounded, and then they'll start eating. I mean, it's like it's kind of this joke out here with me. every time I like eat with like Evan and Heather and Whitney or Peter, our neighbor down there, and I'm always like, God, I was hungry and I didn't even know it. I say that all, I don't even realize it. I'll be like, man, I was hungry. They're like, you always say that, man. I'm like, oh, I guess I do. I never even realize I'm hungry. It's ridiculous. They'll typically have, so remember, pitta is hot, oily, light. So they oftentimes will have very good oils to the skin, but whereas kaphas are going to be cold and oily and damp, pittas are going to be warm and oily. And their skin can be moist due to excessive perspiration. And yeah, everything, it's just everything's kind of in the middle. See red face a lot. They tend to like cold drinks. They can tend towards sweaty palms. They tend to have an aversion to excessive sun and like too much. It's like they get hot, overheated really, really easily. And when they get too hot, they get really agitated. Now it's said that pittas require a moderate amount of sleep. I feel like a lot of pittas actually need a lot of sleep just because they tend to burn so hard that they need that time of rest. Psychologically, emotionally, pittas are very quick, like very sharp-minded, very quick to comprehend and understand things. They tend to be very ambitious. They're natural leaders, and they like power, prestige, and control. They like to be the authority. Sometimes for good, sometimes not. On the more negative reflections of pitta, we see they tend towards anger and frustration and irritability and to the point of like hatefulness. They can get very jealous as well. They're just really energetic. Like really, really energetic. Oh. Okay, so our organs of dwelling, the small intestine. We also see sweat, sebum, blood, plasma, and our sense of sight. Say again? Sebum. Let's see. How do I describe sebum?
Oil of your skin.
Yes, okay, thank you. Yeah. Oils of the skin. Okay, so... Right, so that's like the sebaceous glands, yes. Thank you. Five sites of... The five fires of Pitta. We have the fire of the stomach. Pachaka. Now, when they say stomach, they're not necessarily just talking about the organ of our stomach. I would say the fire of the solar plexus. So here we're referring to the flame of digestion, the Agni. Small intestine, gallbladder, liver, pancreas. This is the root fire of the body. And in Ayurveda, it's the root of a majority of our health is based on the proper functioning of this fire. So it establishes the digestion and absorption of our food. Also governs our temperature regulation. So they say the fire radiates out from the core out into the periphery. Now, they say it teaches about discernment and assimilation on the psychological level, like how well the fire is in our stomach determines the fire of our mind. So they call in terms of Agni, they call the fire of the stomach and solar plexus Jatharagni, which is the Agni of digestion. But then you have what they call the Medagni. The Medagni is the flame of perception and awareness. That's why people that get really cold digestion, sluggish, constipated, their mind gets really cloudy and foggy too. I remember this happened one time. It was before I knew better, but I was doing like some crazy cleanse and felt like I needed some fiber. So I took all the psyllium husk and didn't drink enough water. And I didn't poop for like 3 days.
I did that like 3 weeks ago.
It sucks. It's the worst. So did you get brain fog? Like your mind get kind of cloudy?
I just started kind of like freaking out because I knew it was bad. And I went up just like drink a lot of like salt water.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Like, yeah, good call. Yeah, that's good.
And it freaked me out so much. I was like, I'm never touching this stuff again.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good for some, not for others. But I had never experienced constipation before. And that was pretty incredible. I could not think worth a shit. I didn't even realize I made a pun. But for reals, I couldn't. I was so, it would be like, people would ask me a question, I'd be like, yeah, it's like, what? You know, it was just like, oh my God, it was so bad. I was like, wow, I really saw that everything got sluggish down there and everything got sluggish up here. So mental assimilation, having a discerning mind, what we let in and what we don't let in. Okay, then we have the fire of the blood, Ranjaka. This is the formation and preservation of the blood. And this is determined by the Jatharagni, the fire of digestion. So that fire of the blood is really located in the liver, primarily the liver, but also in Ayurveda they say the spleen and the stomach. So when impaired, we can get anemic or bile accumulation, stagnation. We have the fire of the heart, Sadhaka. And they say this sits with prana in the heart. So Sadhaka, the fire of the heart, is where we learn to think with our heart, the spirit of our heart. So that would be like the Shen in Chinese medicine. It governs memory and mental functioning. Then we have the fire of the eyes, alochaka. It animates the sight, gives our eyes luster, and enables us to have perception of light and color. Life vision and our life purpose, that fire in the eyes. This all makes sense in medical astrology. The sun governs the heart and the eyes and a lot of the fire of the stomach. So a lot of this is sun medical astrology stuff too. Okay, next we have the fire of the skin, brajaka. This is that gives the skin its glow and luster. Protects the body from external illness. Also has to do with the peripheral venting system, what we call the febrile mechanism. So it has to do with the venting and the opening and closing of the pores of the skin. The pulse is the middle finger position.